This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Big Orange Wagon Podcast alongside Tyler Milner, executive producer of The Drive on Sports Radio 610 from 2 to 6 p.m. every day. I am Patrick Creighton, host of Area 45 evenings on Sports Radio 610 and T-Mill. This is the Big Orange Wagon Podcast where you go to get all your up-to-date Astros info. We peeled the onion back a little bit on this show, so if you're expecting just the basic stuff, you're getting a little more than that from us because we dig a little deeper and we peel the onion back a little further and we dig into some better info and we try to give you all of that info and bring it out for you guys. T-Mill, we got five games to go.
Five games till October baseball, man.
All right. The Astros' magic number is two.
Two.
They will turn to Framber Valdez tonight to both clinch the division and essentially make sure that really put the coffee sippers behind the eight ball.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Seattle. Take a look at the current AL wild card standings. The coffee sippers are a game and a half behind the court jesters.
Wait, who are the court jesters again?
Kansas City.
Okay, gotcha.
They're also a half a game behind the Twinkies, who have played one fewer game than they have. The Orioles, or if we call them the Hoes, the Baltimore Hoes, they have wild card one. Then, the Detroit Meows, who have been on an absolute tear.
No kidding.
I mean, they have been the hottest team in baseball for a month and a half.
Yeah.
Then you have the court jesters, and right now those are the top three teams in the wild card in the American League. The coffee sippers, a game and a half out of that third spot, and taking a fat L tonight would really hurt them as they would be potentially 2 to 2.5 games out.
Would love to see it.
With only four games to go, would really put them in a tough spot, but it would clinch the AL West for the Houston Astros, who have won the AL West every year since 2017, where there was a full season.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say at this point that the West runs through Houston. I think it's extremely safe. In fact, it's just factual. Sorry, Seattle.
So they will turn to Fromber. I thought the lineup tonight was interesting. Now, obviously, no Yordan Alvarez, and there'll be more on that later.
Mm-hmm.
Astros lineup tonight, Altuve at second, Tucker in right, Breggy at third, Yiner behind the dish, Singleton DHs, Caratini at first, Pena at short, Hayward in left, Doobie in center.
Doobie.
Now, my first reaction to this was a prime opportunity for them to DH Jose Altuve. Whenever Fromber is on the mound, you will usually see Yordan in left when Yordan is not, dealing with knee issues, which, again, we'll get to later. But the reason why you can do that is because Fromber is a ground ball machine.
100%.
And when we say ground ball machine, what I mean is he is number one in ground ball percentage, almost 61%.
I was about to say, by a lot. This guy just gets that ball on the ground every single time. Double play, double play, double play. Let's go.
So when we say ground ball machine, we mean the number one dude in all of baseball. This is when you want to put your best infield defense on the field, which would mean Mauricio Dubon at second base.
Yes, Doobie is clearly at this point in their careers better than the GOAT known as Jose Altuve over there.
It's a prime opportunity to give Altuve a day off in the field. Just let him DH, play Mauricio Dubon at second base. As far as needing somebody who can pick the ball at first base, is John Singleton the guy that you have the most confidence in being able to pick those short hop ground ball for those short hop throws?
Are you saying, am I backed into a corner here and like I have to look at the Astros roster and the first baseman that they've been playing and I must pick one?
Your options are Singleton, Yiner, and Caratini. Which guy do you trust to scoop those throws the most?
I mean, probably Singleton by a hair.
That's the guy who should be playing first base when Fromber is on the bump.
100%.
Because every ground ball needs to be, that play needs to be executed. That means Doobie at second and Singleton at first. That is the defensive alignment that we should be seeing from this team, not the one we're seeing tonight. And it is definitely the defensive alignment we need to see in the postseason. Here is what backs up that argument, right? Coming into this year, there was some question about Fromber and regression because last season, Fromber had one of his mental meltdowns that basically lasted half a season.
Yeah, it was an epic meltdown.
And there were some questions, right? What is Fromber? Was this just, hey, things kind of went sideways for him that particular year? Or, because look, after the first 2 months of the season, things kind of went sideways for the Astros as a whole, right? Last season, the Astros got off to a hot start, and then they really were not a great team. They were a 500, maybe, at times below 500 team outside of that for stretches.
Yeah, almost the antithesis of this season.
They were a middling team for the last 4 months of the season.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they got off to the awful start as everybody and their brother was hurt. And then, really, since June, they've been the best team in baseball.
Mm.
And Fromber Valdez, who had a lot of questions to answer about regression, questions to answer about maturity. Well, Fromber's answered all those questions like an ace the test. He's got a 285 ERA this year. He's got 165 Ks and 170 innings. Mm. He's holding opponents to a 216 batting average and a 108 whip, and that's in 27 starts.
Beautiful.
We mentioned in the American League, Fromber, number one in ground ball rate. He's also number two in ERA. He's fourth in opponent OPS, which is 599, which, if you're wondering, sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, it sucks for hitters. For a pitcher, that's phenomenal.
Hell yeah.
A 599 OPS for a batter is absolute trash.
I mean, it's not quite as bad as our former first baseman, who shall not be named. You know what, Abreu, I'll
just say it's in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And if you think that is good, let's just look at our last 15 starts.
Let's.
Where Fromber has a 204 ERA with 109 strikeouts in 97 innings. He's held opponents to a 194 average, and the Astros are 13-2 in those 15 starts. In fact, Fromber Valdez and Hunter Brown have been the best 1-2 punch in baseball for their last 15 starts since June 1st. Fromber, number one in wins, he's 11-4. Hunter Brown is tied for third, he's 10-4. Hunter has, in his last six starts, given up two runs or less in five of them and gotten a no decision in every single one.
Ouch. That's, at the same time, both awesome to know that the young kid Hunter Brown is pitching his ass off, but ouch.
A perfect example, last night, Hunter Brown goes, six innings, gives up one earned run, and the Astros just don't score.
It's one of those nights where the bats went silent.
ERA since June 1, Fromber Valdez, 227, Hunter Brown, 231. Opponent slugging since June 1, Fromber Valdez, 279, Hunter Brown, 300.
These numbers are all good. These are good things. They're turning me on a little bit. This is what you need. This is the pitching you need as you approach October. Hunter Brown and Fromber leading the way. You love it.
So this is where we talk dirty.
Mm.
The Astros have Alex Bregman coming up for a deal this offseason.
Yeah.
Fromber and Tucker next offseason.
Mm-hmm.
You only get one pick.
Fact. You ain't getting two of them or three of them. That's I'm glad not to be Dana Brown in this situation. I can tell you that. Now, I'm going to be hoping to God that Dana Brown and company make the right decision. But yeah, these three guys are looking for a payday. And the one that we've been mentioning most here so far on this edition of the Big Orange Wagon, Framber Valdez, guaranteed someone is going to give him that bag.
Framber's the guy that I signed.
Yes.
Framber's the guy that I signed. He has been phenomenally durable.
Mm-hmm.
His motion is not one that makes you feel like he is susceptible to consistent injury. In fact, the only injury he's had was he took a comebacker off the hand.
Yeah, I remember that. He like instinctually stuck his hand out for like that liner or something and it went off his hand.
And not for nothing, he did not pitch well really after that happened. So
right.
That's a guy, look, elite pitching, and Framber is an elite pitcher, is too hard to come by.
Yes.
When you can get a guy like a Framber Valdez, who, look, he's not a 300 strikeout guy. He's a ground ball machine.
Yes, he is.
Not every team has the infield defense capable of backing him up the way that Bregman and Pena back him up. If I'm Dana Brown, yeah, it's going to be really hard to say goodbye to Alex Bregman. If Alex Bregman wants 8 years and $30 million a year, you can take a look at what George Springer's contract looks like, mm-hmm. and the way he has fallen off a cliff.
It's a great comp.
And not that Breggy is going to fall off the same cliff, but the bottom line is when you're signing guys into their mid and late 30s, their production falls off.
Right. It's a completely different ideology when you're talking about guys like Bregman, these hitters, these power guys, and you're talking about arms. You're talking about starting pitching. We didn't talk about this before we started recording here, Patrick, but I co-sign 100%. If I was picking three off the top of my head, absolutely going for Framber. Pitching wins you championships at the end of the day. I know that seems a little broad and kind of all-encompassing, but it's true. Your arms are going to take you further than an Alex Bregman over at third base will. I'm sorry. We all love Breggy. He's a Houston staple. He's part of this run. We're all going to miss him. We'll love him. But you got to go for Framber if you're picking one of these guys.
No, and look, it's hard to find a really good third baseman. It's hard. It's hard to find a right fielder who's a threat for 30-30 every year.
Yeah. As long as his shin isn't split in half.
It is damn near impossible to find elite pitching. And Framber was not supposed to be an elite pitcher, right? They signed him as an older international free agent for, what, $20,000? I mean, they gave him pennies.
Yeah, one of those finds of the Astros that nobody saw coming. It's beautiful.
And they developed him. They coached him up to be the guy that he is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to put that much effort and work in it, then you know what? You, of all guys to pay, that's the guy to pay. You know everything about him. You basically raised him in baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all he knows. He probably wants to stay in Houston more than anybody, but that price tag does have to be right.
And the one group of guys you can say, all right, at age 37, who do I trust most, health being presumed, to have the best season? An outfielder, a third baseman, or the ground ball machine pitcher?
Mm-hmm.
Gonna go with the pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, he's every part of the cliche that you hear, workhorse. Framber Valdez is a workhorse, year in and year out. Of course, there's seasons where, like we talked about a second ago, where he slumped last year and stuff like that. That ain't been happening this year. And don't forget, this guy at one point did, I think he still has it, the Major League Baseball record for most consecutive quality starts.
He does.
So I mean, these are all things that when you look out on the mound and you're looking at whoever's wearing orange, you want Framber Valdez in that orange jersey. You don't want him somewhere else getting double plays on your ass if you're the Houston Astros.
Now, if we go in the Wayback Machine to April and May, when the Astros were having trouble getting out of their own way,
mm-hmm.
And we talked about the three most important things for this team, you may have heard me say this before. Pitching, pitching, pitching.
Heard it a few times from
you,
PC.
When we expanded this to five things, it was pitching, 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 and pitching.
Yeah. It's that important. It's not even a joke, really.
What has been the biggest staple of this golden era of Astros baseball is pitching. They gave up on Garrett Cole because he wanted three bags
and to represent himself,
you know. But his goal was, you know what, Scott Boras is going to take me into free agency, and I want the bag. He was more concerned about getting the bag than anything else.
100%.
And he went to a team that was happy to give him the bag and has not sniffed the World Series.
And made him shave his beard off.
Yeah, so, you know, taking a douchey guy and making him look douchier. Fromber knows what he has in the Astros, knows he has a chance to win every year.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense for him to say, you know what, this team has my back defensively. They have had my back my whole career. Mm-hmm. I am going to get paid well. I might not get the absolute most dollars, but I'm still going to get paid a lot of freaking dollars.
Oh, for sure.
And I have the chance to be an Astros legend.
He's already gotten close to that kind of air. I mean, he's already, you know, one of these beloved guys. He's been here for this run. But yeah, I mean, you can make this thing, you can take this to a whole different level if you lock him in on a big deal for a lot of years. He's only 30, PC. He's 30 years old. He's going to be 30 when next baseball season starts. He doesn't turn 31 until November. Or I'm sorry, he'll turn 31 in November this year, so he'll be 31 next season. But Framber's young. You're talking about a guy that's been a workhorse. The injuries have been minimal, like you mentioned. Well, especially when you look at the arbs at the infirmary in 2024, you've needed a guy like Framber that doesn't go anywhere, and he's young. He's only 30. He'll be 31 when you're starting next baseball season. You gotta go with the arm.
Well, and here's the other side of it, right? Because he was a guy they signed as an older player.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he doesn't get into the Astros system until he's 21.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have all the miles on his arm that other top pitchers at his age have.
That's a good point.
Right, 2022 was the first time he threw two. It's really the only time he's ever thrown 200. He's 200 and a third innings, 201 and a third. And you know, before that, the most he had thrown was 134. He threw 198 last year. He's at 170 this year. He's shown you he can maintain that volume.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw 134 because, again, he took the comeback rough the hand.
Yeah.
But this is a guy who, you know, 2022, he set the quality starts, consecutive quality starts record. Last year, even in what was considered to be a down year, a 3.45 ERA.
Which
3.45 ERA is a bad year for Fromber Valdez.
Yeah.
And like, this is a guy who, you know, could potentially win a Cy Young or two going forward.
Hell yeah. He's been in the running a few times at least.
You've seen how hard it has been for the Astros to keep pitchers healthy. If you have a guy that you know is a bona fide workhorse and takes the ball every fifth day or every sixth day, depending on what you're trying to do, that guy, like a Fromber Valdez, to have him and Hunter Brown at the front of the rotation, that is paramount to your designs of winning the division, going to the ALCS, and hopefully going to a World Series essentially every season.
100%. Couldn't agree more. And I loved what you brought up, saying to go with that kind of tag team effort going on here with Framber and Hunter Brown. Because Hunter Brown, man, now you talk about young. I know age is relative, and I was talking about how Framber ain't that old. He's not. Hunter Brown is a kid, and this dude is out here being nails combined with Framber Valdez as you're getting ready for October. So it's a good spot to be in on the mound for the Stros.
As good as Tucker is, did they not go on a run? Well, he was out for 3 months, and they were the best team in baseball.
Yeah, it was like the Sengun thing with the Rockets almost. Tucker went down, and that's almost when the Astros turned it on. Like, no one's saying that Tucker was making them worse, just like hope Rockets fans aren't saying that Sengun being out last year when they got hot made them worse. No, it's kind of a freaky thing. But yeah, they succeeded just fine without Kyle Tucker and his shin.
It's when the starting rotation normalized. It's when Verlander got back. It's when Fromber got back. You know, when they knew they had the same five guys going consistently, and everybody kind of like that has a trickle down effect of, all right, the rotation is now set and guys are at least getting their five innings in. We're not going to the bullpen in the first inning and the second inning. Guys' roles are not being jumbled around because, well, we need to get seven innings of bullpen and I've got two guys that aren't available. So we're kind of throwing your roles out the window today.
Right.
Everybody got back to being in their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And when guys know their roles, they pitch better. And when you're not down seven runs in two innings, the lineup performs better.
Shocker. It's weird how that works.
So, you know, really, as things stabilized for the, wait for it, pitching, things stabilized for the team as a whole, and they were able to play at the level of being the best team in baseball, even without Kyle Tucker in the lineup, even without Justin Verlander in the rotation for a long period of time, because everything else around them had normalized. Now, as you know, Astros getting towards the postseason here, there are three main questions that the team faces.
Okay.
Number one, what is going on with Yordan's knee?
That's number to me, that's almost like you're pitching. Right now, for me in my head, Yordan is concern one, two, and three. I know where you're going. But Yordan, that should concern every Astros fan in a big way with the way that guy swings a bat.
Now, Yordan said today he was feeling a little better. He was actually able to put weight, like most of his weight on his leg, which he had not been able to do. He's still not able to like bend or twist or cut or anything like that. He can't run yet. He is hoping that the swelling in his knee will go down over the next day or two, so that he might get a couple of swings in the final series against the Flying G's in Cleveland. But look, let's be real. Yordan doesn't need to swing the bat again this season. The only thing he needs to do is get treatment every day and be ready for the postseason.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it feels like that bone the Astros have thrown to us in the last 24-ish hours, the whole, oh yeah, we're expecting the big man Yordan to be back before the end of this regular season. It feels just like one of those situations where the Astros are trying to tell everybody in Houston, hey, calm down. You know, Aaron Rodgers, relax. He'll be back before the regular season's even over. Well, we don't really need him back, but I get what they're doing, but yeah, let's just let him rest. Let that knee heal up. Let that inflammation go down. And trust me when I say, Yordan, all of Houston is also hoping your swelling goes down. Just let him rest. Get ready for October. Yes.
So you know how I say nobody gets off the mat like the Houston Astros?
Yes.
Well, only second to that is nobody lies about injuries like the Houston Astros.
Facts.
You would think everything that they do is like a nuclear secret.
Oh yeah.
Like this is high government clearance that you need to know what the hell's going on, to the point where once upon a time, Dusty Baker didn't even know which hand your arm was hurting with, because it's a secret, man. It's a secret.
HIPAA, bro. HIPAA.
And you know what's going on with Yordan's knee? Look, they say he has a sprain. They've lied to us before.
And in sports, that term alone is used so flippantly on a wide range of injuries.
This year, they've lied to us before. Mm-hmm. You know, a sprain could mean partial ACL tear if you're the Houston Astros. A sprain could mean torn meniscus if you're the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he is able to put weight on his leg tells you it's probably not a ligament tear. But I'm going to say that I do have some concern that he has meniscus damage in his knee because of the fact that there was so much swelling and he couldn't put pressure on it. And because, you know, this is just what happens to the Astros this year, right? Anything that happens, it's like, okay, you know, Christian Javier, yeah, you know, he's got a little neck issue, and that neck issue became Tommy John surgery.
He slept wrong.
You know, Justin Verlander was just going to miss a start, and he missed 2.5 months. And, you know, we'll get into him in a second, but just it seems like, you know, for example, Kyle Tucker. Oh yeah, he's it's just a bruise. He's just going to miss a week. He missed 3 months. So, you know, oh well, yeah, you know what? Yeah, there's probably a fracture in there. And Kyle says, yeah, you know, I fractured my leg, but for the whole time it was just it's a bone bruise.
Yeah, 90 days later. Oh, you don't say. There might be a bit of a. It's probably just a hairline fracture, though, right? It's fine. You can't trust them. You can't trust anything the Astros say with injuries.
And that's it. The bottom line is the Astros lie their asses off when it comes to injuries. So the only thing we really have to go on is. Is Yordan, what are the reports on what does he look like? Is he moving? Is he running in the outfield? What is he doing before the games? What is he doing in warmups and practice? Because look, I don't need him to play, but I need him to show he can play.
Yeah, we need all the Astros beat reporters to just keep on posting videos anytime that big man is out on the diamond before a game. Let me see him move around and I'll be the judge. I don't even need to hear from Joe Espada about any injuries
just
anymore.
Just make sure you have an alert on your phone for Adam Spillane of what is going on next with the Houston Astros. Yordan's knee, they're needing him to be healthy. Can he be ready for a wild card series of paramount importance?
Yes.
Number two. Justin Verlander's place on the postseason roster, because after his last start, where not only was he lousy, but his velocity was dropping. And we've talked about this before. If his velocity is fine, you trust he will figure it out. Well, he was throwing 94-95 in the first inning and 91-92 in the third inning.
Whew.
That's not mechanics.
No.
And after that game, I had said, I think this is it. I think that's the nail in the coffin. Justin Verlander's not going to make the postseason roster. And when it comes time for the Astros to announce the postseason roster, what they're going to say is JV's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's not making the roster.
And in which case, you should not trust anything they say.
The very next day, Justin Verlander does an interview where he says, I probably came back too early from the neck injury. I'm struggling with it more than I thought I would. The reason I came back was I understand that there was only so many days left in the calendar and I needed to, you know, get myself ready, but it's not going the way that I thought.
I like this prediction. I'm marking it right now because I feel like it could very, very likely come true.
It is, to me, almost a lock.
Yeah.
Verlander is not going to make the postseason roster and they are going to have an injury designation for him.
Yeah, and even I love the prediction, and like I said, we're going to end up revisiting that, I think. But at the end of the day, health and otherwise right now with Justin Verlander and the Houston Astros, you just can't put him on the playoff roster. And that's weird to say because this is a future Hall of Famer. We all love Verlander. It sounds strange to say that as October gets closer and closer, but there's no logical reasoning you'd be able to explain why you're adding JV when you could have one of these younger arms that is not sucking right now for Houston.
Now, with Verlander, we had said if Verlander is on the team, then he's the fourth starter because they're not going to bring him out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
He's Justin Verlander. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's got two rings and two Cy Youngs on this team. He's not going into the bullpen.
No, he'd look at a spot in Dana and say, no, I don't think so.
But the reality is he's not good enough to pitch on this team in the postseason. In the wild card round, you don't need four starters.
Mm-hmm.
You might only need two. At most, you need three.
Yep.
And right now, it's Fromber, Hunter, and Yusei Kikuchi, 1, 2, and 3.
No one should be able to disagree with that. Go spend some time with Kate Upton, JV. We'll be right here waiting for you.
And the reality is, the guy who should be number four and has always should have been number four is Ronel Blanco.
Yeah.
Ronel Blanco has, his issue has been the workload, right? He's career high workload. But that being said, Ronel Blanco, despite the workload, despite the decreased velocity that he has had now, really since the All-Star break, it was two starts before the All-Star break that you noticed Blanco's velocity start to dip.
Yep.
And he has continued to pitch instead of 95-96, 93-94 for the whole season. And he's continued to pitch tremendously well. In fact, in the month of September, in 19 innings, he's allowed 2 runs.
Attaboy, Nail.
That's it. 2 runs in 19 innings with 22 strikeouts.
Even with the dip in
that
velocity.
That is an 0.95 ERA in the month of September. And yes, they skipped him a start where he had a 2-inning, essentially like relief appearance.
Yeah.
In November, on September 7th, where he started September 1st, started September 15th. Both of those starts, he threw a total of 11 shutout innings. Went 6 innings of only 2-run ball in his last start, where he struck out 9 in 6 innings while throwing 93-94.
Yeah, it's been arguably your most reliable guy to start games on the mound for the Astros. I mean, he'd start in the year with the no-hitter that I know y'all celebrated. That was really fun on Area 45. I believe that was y'all's first H-Town post-game show.
It was, in fact.
Yeah, so that, I mean, from the start, this dude, nail has been nails. Nail has been nails.
And here is, you know, you want to get into like some crazy stuff, right? So, Ronel Blanco, right now, is at 162 1/3 innings. Last season, he threw 125 1/3, and that was his career high by a mile.
And now, once again, he has superseded that in a big way.
And then, whatever's going to go on in the postseason. Ronel Blanco leads baseball in fewest hits allowed per nine, 6.3 hits allowed per nine. That's the number one in baseball.
Yeah, that's a stat that Astros fans can be proud of.
He's a guy who, as a starter last year for Houston with 7 starts, 17 appearances, had a 1.48 whip. You know what his whip is this year?
Tell me.
1.10. That is tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
That is tremendous.
Yeah, he's earned every bit of being in October.
And he's maintained his strikeout rate.
Mm.
Even with the decreased velocity, even with the increased workload, Ronel Blanco is still striking out about an inning. That guy deserves a start in the postseason. Look, and there's a lot of days off in the postseason. So, you know, it's not, you know, traditional every fifth day. At best, it's going to be every sixth day. It's probably going to be every seventh day because you're going to have days off. And that's within a series where, you know, you play. I think I was looking up I think it was the division series.
Okay.
So they'd play, have a day off, play, have a day off, play 2 days, have a day off. Like, right. It's... There's a lot of off days.
Yeah.
So the wild card series doesn't have off days. You play 2-3 games in a row.
Right. It's a blink of an eye.
But if you win the first 2 games, series is over, and then you have a couple off days before the ALDS starts.
Mm-hmm.
Then play off day, play 2, off day. You can get through and have a lot of time off.
Yeah. Rest that arm, Ronel. We know you got miles on it.
When you get to the Astros Invitational, also known as the ALCS. It's you play 2, have a day off, play 3, have a day off.
Mm-hmm.
So your starters are going to get time.
Yeah.
And Ronel Blanco has been way too good to not be among the top 4 starters in the rotation at the behest of a guy who's got a ERA around 9 since he's come off the IL.
Yeah, just because of that name. And you can't argue it. The Verlander name carries a lot of gravitas. I just said it. He's a future first ballot Hall of Famer, but you got to look at the now. And the now says, no, JV, sit your old ass down. Ronel, let's ride.
My question is this. With JV, if they put him on the IL, can he be in the dugout? Can he function as essentially another coach?
That's a huge tool. Huge opportunity for the Astros to get some use out of JV, even if he's not on the mound.
I would think if JV is not on the roster, he knows he doesn't deserve to be on the roster. He knows he's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Does JV, understanding he is going to be a free agent at the end of the year, do everything he can to help this team win another title so he can put a third ring on?
Ooh. Like it, put a ring on.
Because you know what? 3 rings is pretty damn impressive. You get 3 rings.
Yeah.
Our last issue is, how do you construct the bullpen?
This is tough for me.
Now, in the wild card round, you only need 12 pitchers. But I think we all expect them to get past the wild card round. I think we expect that we are looking at the Astros going at least to the ALDS and likely to the ALCS. I do believe that, which is a record. It's already a record for them to do 7 straight, but they would continue to push their record.
That's up
to
right. 8
straight ALCS, hence why we call it the Astros Invitational.
Who did they, do you know off the top of your head who they're tied with 7 straight trips to the CS?
I want to say.
Is it a Braves?
The Braves went to... Braves went to 9 in the National League, 8 or 9.
God, those must have been the years when the Braves were just consistently knocking the Astros out of the playoffs.
Yes, and they won 1 World Series in that whole time.
That's right.
I want to say it was the Oakland A's of the 70s that had gone to all the division, the ALCS series in a row.
Yeah, I think you're right. See, Patrick told you at the top, we got information that you're going to want to hear.
I want to say it was the, you know, the Reggie Jackson, Catfish Hunter, Raleigh Fingers teams that had gone consistently.
All I had was Braves.
But you look at that, how this pitching staff would roll out. Like, so Fromber, Hunter, Kikuchi, and Ranella, your four starters. And Arrigetti is going to go to the bullpen. So that's five of your 13.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say, okay, how am I conducting my other eight guys? Well, Hader, Presley, Abreu, and Neris, that's four. So that's nine of your 13. So you need four more pitchers. Who are the four more pitchers going to be?
God, that's tough for me.
Because, you know, you look at how many guys. I mean, look, Taylor Scott getting hurt at the end of the year was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think Caleb Ort's going to make this playoff roster, even though his fastball is really hard. Pin friggin' straight, really hard.
All I can think about are the back-to-back-to-back.
He's going to make the roster because, well, they need arms.
Yeah.
I think Brian King is going to make the roster because they need arms.
Mm-hmm.
I know he pitched better with the Astros, but, man, I don't know about Caleb Ferguson. I might take a pass on Caleb Ferguson, at least right now. I might pass on him.
Well, and I would too, but that's why this is so tough for me and why I'm a little bit concerned when it comes to this bullpen conversation with the Astros in October, because, man, I don't have a lot of faith right now in Ord either. Like, I could pass on him too. But yeah, I mean, Ferguson has done nothing, especially as of late, that would warrant an automatic, yeah, let's get him in the bullpen for October.
Not on the active roster, but a guy that I would rather see on the playoff roster, Forrest Whitley.
I hadn't even thought of that. The young kid, he's healthy right now because he was just up.
That would be 12. So who is 13? And because 13 is going to be really hard to come by, it might be Caleb Ferguson. He might be the guy that you go to if you're up by a ton or down by a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he might be your super mop-up guy.
Yeah.
But I think the back, those last two spots on the roster are going to be interesting because they need they need some arms in the back of that pack.
Yep, absolutely. Is when you really wish you had Kendall Graveman around, but alas.
Yeah, and the idea of, you know, could Graveman pitch in September? Well, Graveman's throwing a bullpen. There's no way he's going to be ready to pitch.
No.
There's no way.
No.
Not Kendall Graveman, not Luis Garcia. Or don't ask me about the other guy because we just know.
Yeah.
There's the guys who are hurt are hurt.
Yeah.
And they're not going to pitch.
I really like the Forrest Whitley thought. I had let Forrest escape my mind, but that could be the move. For them, I think Forrest Whitley does need to make this bullpen roster for the Astros as they get into playoffs.
And as far as the bench, I would absolutely have Cesar Salazar on the bench.
Ooh,
that allows me to utilize Victor Caratini the field,
mm-hmm.
And I still have a backup catcher. I can use Caratini as a pinch hitter. He has been excellent as a pinch hitter this year. And the Astros have been one of the best teams in baseball this year, pinch hitting. And Caratini has been a big part of that. It allows me to use Caratini in a big spot late in the game because, he's having probably the best offensive season of his career.
Oh, yeah, gotta be.
Caratini has been terrific this year. And a guy who I don't think he's ever hit for the kind of average that he's hitting for this year, at least not in a very long time.
No.
I mean, I know he's been in the league for a bit. Now, he's 31 years old. He's been in the league for a while. But Victor Caratini's 270 average this year would be a career high.
Mm-hmm.
His 337 on base would be second highest of his career. 742 OPS would be second highest of his career. The only year he was higher was 2019.
Okay, yeah. So that adds up.
He has done this in, 230 at-bats. He's got a 112 OPS plus, so he's been an above-average hitter despite the fact he's only had 230 at-bats. And he can play some first, and, the switch hitting opportunity, you can play him at first, you can play him behind the plate and play Yiner at first. You know, you don't want to play John Singleton against left-handed pitching, period, no. Full stop. But you can. Yiner has no split. Yiner has no splits.
Interesting.
His OPS against lefties and righties, I think, are within 4 points.
Oh, wow.
Like 0.004, 4 points.
Consistency, okay. Yeah, and I love the how you started that thought, PC. Like, just don't forget, people, he's been doing nothing too much for us to complain about lately, but Joe Espada is still a first-year manager in Major League Baseball, and he's about to go into October playoff baseball as manager for the very first time. So the more versatility, the more options you can provide to manager Joe Espada, like you just laid out, if you were to bring Cesar Salazar, have that option, the different things you can do with Caratini and at first base, that is a great thing for your first-year manager, who's probably going to be crapping his pants a little bit as we get deeper into playoff ball.
Here's John Singleton's splits versus righties: 260 average, 770 OPS. It's been solid.
Yeah,
you know, 160. He's got a 117 OPS plus. That's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Versus lefties: 149 average, 469 OPS is an automatic out.
As you said, full stop.
Victor Caratini against lefties: 359 average,
ooh,
870 OPS.
Ooh.
He has mashed left-handed pitching.
Victor
doesn't have a ton of at-bats, but the opportunities he's had, he's hit.
Yeah, he's capitalizing.
So, against lefties, Big John sits and Vic plays.
God, I don't, because I'm an Astros fan, but I almost hope to see John Singleton in a lineup against a lefty, just because I know you will go berserk on this podcast. Like, I am just imagining the anger spilling out of you if that were to happen. But no, surely Espada will not put Singleton against a lefty.
For everything people like to say about the Astros and the analytics, they're still a very analytically driven team.
Mm-hmm.
And I am 100% sure that Joe Espada knows these numbers.
Yeah, when the numbers are that extreme.
You know, the idea being, when there's a right-handed pitcher, John Singleton has been a better-than-average hitter this year against right-handed pitching.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a left-handed pitcher, Victor Caratini has been a better-than-average hitter against left-handed pitching. You're going to let Caratini play. Now, whether he plays first, whether he catches, doesn't matter. You're going to have Caratini's bat in the lineup, and John's going to sit. And, like, you know, when I was growing up, most teams had platoons at multiple positions.
Right.
You had a righty lefty split at a lot of places. The Mets had platoons in center field. They had platoon in second base. You know, these were normal things. You know, Wally Backman and Tim Tuffel, Lenny Dykstra and Mookie Wilson. At one point, they wanted to play in Mookie and Lenny in the same outfield because, well, one, they got rid of George Foster, and then it was, you know, when they had Kevin McReynolds out there, they would move him around. So they would switch the two guys up. So there were always platoons of, oh, we play the righty and the lefty against each other.
Yeah.
Wally Backman, as a left-handed hitter, he was terrific against righties. He had 300 against righties. Couldn't hit a lefty to save his life. But Tim Tuffel could. Get a little Tuffel shuffle going, you know. But these are things that were normal as part of baseball. Now we get to where there are not a lot of platoons, per se, where teams don't have a lot of platoons. This is where the Astros should have a platoon.
Yes. Yeah. Capitalize on what you got and deal with what you got as far as John Singleton versus lefties, and make the right choice, Joe. Make the right choice.
You know, as far as, you know, Dubon has been a lot better at least the early month of September. Mauricio Dubon was hitting pretty well. And, you know, can he sustain that, right? Can he refine the bat for,
right,
you know, for the month of September? And so far this month, he's hitting .353. He's, you know, hasn't, he had two hits on Saturday, had two hits on Friday, and overall, he's hitting .353. Now, he doesn't walk. He doesn't walk to save his life.
He really doesn't.
He's got two walks the whole month. But if he's hitting .350, I don't care if his OPS is .740. .740 is still a solid OPS for a center fielder.
Yeah, it's not bad.
He is not as good a defensive player as Jake Meyers, and is never going to be when it comes to playing in center field. But Jake Meyers cannot be an automatic out for the Astros as we go into the postseason. He can't just be, you can't be hitting, you know, 150 and, you know, I know Jake runs everything down. He does. Yeah. He's terrific at track and fly balls. But you cannot be an automatic out at the plate.
No.
And the problem with Jake is that, guess what Jake's hitting this month?
Tell me.
149.
Damn it, Jake. Love the glove, man, but don't forget your bat when you go to the ballpark.
He's got a 496 OPS.
Oh,
I mean, that is worse than Abreu.
That is not Jake from Rake Farm.
In August, he hit 211 with a 568 OPS.
Better.
In July, he hit 169 with a 541 OPS.
Damn, Jake.
In June, he hit 214 with a 632 OPS. Jake has been a bad offensive player for 4 months.
Fact. Fact. And I didn't know the numbers, but it, I mean, every Astros fan has felt it.
If Doobie's going to hit, Doobie's going to play.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, when we get into the postseason, as I said, this is an opportunity where you DH Jose Altuve and you put your best defensive infield. Well, Jake plays center field when Doobie plays second.
Yeah.
But Jake has been an automatic out for 4 months.
Disgusting. And worst case scenario, if you don't go the route you just laid out, which I do think is the optimal way to go, DH Altuve, have Jake in center, your second baseman, Doobie. But even, you know, worst case scenario, maybe there's games this October where you make those, you know, hopefully knock on wood, the Astros are winning games, and maybe towards the end of one, you make that defensive substitution, you know, get Jake in then, protect that lead. But you can't have Jake Meyers holding a bat if he's just going to continue what he's done the last 4 months.
Now, here is where it gets interesting, right? Jake this year against righties, 206 average, 603 OPS. Against lefties, 256 average, 775 OPS. Jake's hitting lefties. He's not hitting righties.
Yeah.
And look, you're going to face more righties than you are lefties. But
of course.
Would you like Mauricio Dubon's numbers?
Yes, I would.
Doobie against righties and Doobie against lefties, not a whole lot of difference. He's got a 275 average against righties, 657 OPS. So not a lot of power, but he's hitting 275.
Right.
Against lefties, he's hitting 252 and 644 OPS. So the numbers say Jake plays against lefties. But against righties, when he's hitting 206, you play Dubon, who's hitting 275.
So you don't have an automatic out.
So again, platoon.
Yep. I see a theme.
It's a little more unusual in today's game, but the Astros, with their positional, with their offensive splits, this is exactly the kind of situation where you platoon guys.
Yeah.
And in the postseason, no time to be screwing around.
Hear that, Joe? No pussyfooting around. No screwing around. It's October, baby.
It's going to do it for this edition of the Big Orange Wagon Podcast. He's Tyler Milner, executive producer of The Drive, 2 to 6 p.m. every day on Sports Radio 610. I'm Patrick Creighton, host of Area 45. Get us weeknights on Sports Radio 610. You feeling maybe another wagon around on a Friday?
Friday sounds like a winner to me.
Maybe a Friday wagon. Big Orange Wagon coming your way with more info and insight and all those onions getting peeled up as we give you all the latest on your Houston Astros. Make sure you like and subscribe to the Big Orange Wagon podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we will see you next time. Let's go, Astros.
Choo-choo MFers! I said, train,